Hello and welcome to Zero Hanger TV, where we're recapping all the latest news and views from round 5 of the 2024 AFL season. On today's episode, we're looking at the Western Bulldogs list, where they sit, where they're going, and what they probably should be looking at for their future, and I guess for the back end of the 2024 season. Some more contentious calls from the MRO, whether they're the right ones, and what else can probably come out of some of these incidents that we're not seeing. Obviously, we've got our MVP votes in for round 5. We've got our rookie rankings, and we'll have our mailbag segment at the very end. To look over it all is fellow reporter Aidan Chiellini. Aidan, how are you, mate?
Good, Mitch. Yourself?
Yes, very good. Very good.
Welcome back after the trip away in Adelaide and gather around.
Yeah, it was good. It was fun. Back here now. Lovely Melbourne. have you been all right?
Yeah, good. Yeah, good. Held down the fort while you and Phoenix were away. Managed, but managed. No, it's good to have you guys back and back in the thick of things.
Yeah, it's great to be back in the office, back in the studio, and back kind of covering all the latest in footy from round 5. Probably another busy weekend, plenty of news to come out of it, plenty of close games as well, which is a nice little touch for round 5. A few upsets as well for the tipsters out there. But obviously been a talking point for most of this season, and we're only 5 or 6 rounds in. Now the Western Bulldogs slipped to 2-3 with that loss against Essendon. Come up against St Kilda tonight, this weekend, I should say. Two clubs are wanting to bounce back from losses in round 5. But yeah, I don't think we're going to hear the end of the Dogs for quite some time, just given selection calls that are made. Obviously, Luke Beveridge is always going to be a talking point when he's coach over at Witten Oval. But their list... And another talking point, I guess, that probably leads the discussion around the Western Bulldogs is just how great this list can be and how much it's underperforming, not only this year, but the past probably three years. Made the grand final in 2021, pretty much winning, or we had the one hand on the cup halfway through the third term in that game against Melbourne, and have really struggled, haven't won a final, obviously, since. And at this point of the season, probably not expected to do anything further as well. Selection, seems like just about every week, they've got an All-Australian that's coming into the game as the sub, which I guess, you look at the McRae case and interrupted preseason. Caleb Daniels' form hasn't exactly been flying. And then Bailey Dale was the latest one to kind of start in that role, and Luke Beveridge kind of explained why. But... it's certainly like even some of these moves and kind of giving some extra minutes into some youthful talent isn't paying off. No matter which way Luke Beveridge wants to spin his magnets.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Riley Sanders, Harvey Gallagher seems to be getting the first pick before those older players, those more experienced players. So you can see what he's trying to do. And when you really look at their list in depth and have a full team analysis, they do have a lot of, I guess, aging midfielders like Tom Liberatore. I know Marcus Bontempelli is probably at the peak of his powers, but they do need someone around him to support that. Jack McRae is obviously getting toward the end of his career, but you just think that they do need to start unearthing some of these younger talents, because otherwise they'll just be sitting there, playing VFL more often than not, and they'll probably look for opportunities elsewhere. A lot of clubs will probably be looking into these guys saying, we can get them on our list, and probably not for a lot because they haven't had that experience at AFL to really make those claims to us with big coin or even longer contracts at rival clubs. So I understand what Luke Beveridge is trying to do, but it just seems when they just need a win and win games that they should be doing, like against Essendon, which they failed to do so, you need to have these experienced players in, like Bailey Dale starting as a sub, as you mentioned, probably not my first pick. Caleb Daniel in the VFL this week, James Harms in the VFL this week. You'd think, would like to get, him alongside while playing in the midfield, and they're even doing a role on Zach Merritt, who got off the leash a little bit, and they had Darcy Parrish as well. So they're a bit in no man's land like they have been since that 2021 grand final loss. They've kind of been in between making finals to kind of bottoming out and potentially getting some younger players through the draft in. So It's a really interesting period for the Dogs, as we've probably alluded to. When they're on, they're probably up there with the top 6 clubs in the AFL. But the performance on Friday night against Essendon just showed how far off the pace they actually really are.
Yeah, few and far between those kind of performances that you're talking about, where we do see every line clicks. Obviously, their back line's a bit of an issue. They've found one again. Well, not found one, but Buka Karmas' return to the back line has really helped Liam Jones. But it's probably that third piece, and that's where James O'Donnell comes into it, and that's why Bailey Dale was the sub, sorry. So there's a lot of moving parts, and just a little bit of panic, you might think, from Luke Beveridge, with maybe the amount of pressure that it is on for him this season. We won't see Aaron Norton moving to the back line ever with Luke Beveridge as coach. Just won't happen. And I think that's fine. I think what they've got with Darcy and Ugal Hagen and the pressure that Rory Lobb supplies from underneath is probably what you want at a good club. And that's what you say, that's exactly what good clubs have, is good pressure from underneath. And that means that it's a Caleb Daniel or a Jack McRae or a Bailey Dale. And supplying that pressure, that's great. But those good clubs as well, those bottom six players, are usually quite strong. And I wouldn't think that Daniel or McRae or Dale are in the bottom six. I think they'd be above that. And that is where your Brambles, your Bakers, your Gallaghers, I think Sanders has been fine. He's probably still in that bottom six though. So there's got to be a mix where, you know, they have O'Donnell playing, they can afford Bailey Dale to play. And there is a role probably for Caleb Daniel down back, ahead of a Bramble maybe. So it's really trying to fit that cog, because, you know, like Beveridge is saying that he probably wants Caleb Daniel playing midfield. And I find it hard that there's not a position for him. And then, you know, when they haven't got Bailey Smith, when Jack McRae isn't there in there full time. So outside of Bontempelli and Liberatore, who is that third midfielder going to be? Because it doesn't seem like it's necessarily going to be McRae. Doesn't seem like it's going to be Daniel. Sanders as well has been subbed out, I think, twice now.
Yeah.
So that's the really one area that they really need to get clicking. I think the forward line's fine. Potential is really high and doesn't always come together straight away, especially now that they've got Sam Darcy in that mix. But yeah, I think they're fine with their small forwards. Riley West and Cody Waitman have been fantastic. So it's going to be a lot to play out. You might not have had them in your top eight at the start of the season, did you?
Don't think so.
Don't think that's changing?
From memory, no. I just... the inconsistency and their work behind the ball, that needs a lot of work. Even the game, if you date it back to the Geelong game in Adelaide Oval during gather round, you saw the midfield mix of Treloar, Bontempelli and Liberatore arguably have some of the best games of their career, and yet somehow managed to lose that game. Now, they were trailing, you know, you give them an honourable mention that they came back, you know, tap on the back, but that doesn't win you flags, it doesn't get you in finals contention. So games like that, they do need a win. I definitely still don't see them kind of creeping up into that eight spot.
No, I can't see it happening either, to be honest. But like I said, I think things can change for them pretty quickly. They need to find that in the next few weeks, or else it's going to get much, much worse. Yep. Moving on, another weekend, another week of tribunals coming up, but kind of all in between that is the MRO's decision making and their rap sheet from the weekend. So obviously we had Charlie Cameron handed a one-match ban on Thursday night for his dangerous tackle on Jack Lever. That's being challenged. Matt Crouch was the other suspension from the weekend for his dangerous tackle. His bump on Jack Carroll. And that's probably the one that's been talked about a little bit more, just given a very similar incident, some might say similar incident involving Zach Butters, who... I guess there's always going to be a lot of talk around a player like that, given Brownlow contention and their placing in the league. And I guess a lot of people have kind of been a bit lost on why one was given a week and one was probably not cited at all, when very similar. But we have had some explanation. And what was your take on, I guess, the two incidents and the outcome?
Yeah. I did see a little bit of difference between the Butters, I guess, incident and the Matt Crouch incident. I think both are taught the right way to go about it in terms of turning their body, using their hip and shoulder to protect themselves whilst going for the ball. I think where the MRO did see the distinction between the two, I guess, incidents or bumps, whatever you like to call it, is that Butters got there a little bit earlier and was kind of simultaneously making contact with the ball with Bailey Banfield from Fremantle, whereas Matt Crouch probably was marginally late and made more forceful contact with Carlton's Jack Carroll's head, which obviously the AFL is looking at making sure that that is a priority of their findings and how they hand it down. But I don't want to say that Matt Crouch shouldn't have got a suspension, but when you're taught to bump and protect yourself in football, that's exactly what he did. He did it the right way. He operated it in the right manner. He wasn't malicious in his bump. He didn't have the intent to injure the other players. So he might have just got there a little bit late, and that might be the costly factor in terms of his suspension.
I think I see that one differently. Just a little. You look at the Crouch one, seems like where not saying he's prioritising contact over getting the ball, but seemed like he, at the point of contact, he was, I guess, yeah, he was moving into it, into the player rather than going for the ball. Whereas, as you said, Butters probably more onto the ball, still coming in a crazy pace that I can't believe Bailey Banfield was able to get straight off his feet. There was high contact, but it does really come down to it's this weird balance from them, if it's outcome or if it's the action. Obviously, thankfully, neither player was concussed from either incident, but I certainly could have been different penalties or a penalty for Butters if Banfield was concussed. And the other is obviously intent and what they were trying to do. And for me, it looked like Crouch was, when he got toward the ball, had to kind of make sure he made the contact first so that he could get to the ball, whereas Butters maybe all eyes for the ball. And he might have even seen Banfield, to be honest.
Yeah.
He was going that quick. Yeah. But I can understand why one was judged differently to the other, but I couldn't have been far off for Butters if Bailey Banfield was a bit worse for wear after that one.
No, and I just think, given now that it was two similar incidents and one was given one game suspension, the other wasn't cited or, didn't even get a look in really in terms of Butters' bump, it'd be great to see the MRO or the AFL do come out with some more clarity. As we've kind of broken down just then, we do see there is some differences in between the two bumps and incidents, but if the AFL make it clear that, this was the reasoning why and why not, then I think that, the rest of the AFL landscape and those who are interested in the game would really have some clarity around, what they're looking for and what they want players not to do or players to do going forward.
Continuing on our discussion about Zach Butters, he is actually flying up our MVP leaderboard at the moment. Comes into our fourth spot overall, 20-vote game, one of a few to do so with, I think, Jeremy Cameron, Sam Durham, Noel Anderson, Cam Rayner, Jake Waterman, also with best on-ground performances. Just looking at our top 10, Isaac Heaney holds the lead with an 8-vote gap over Max Gorn. Gorn, you put up another 10 votes. And then Matt Rowell, Zach Butters, as we said, Zach Merritt in at fifth, Connor Rosey at sixth, Tom Green, Christian Petrarca, Caleb Strong, and Jeremy Cameron, who's one of those 20 players, sneaks into the top 10. Just about everyone in that top 10 polled except for Green and Petrarca. Petrarca has a bye this week as well, so he could slip quite far. And with Max Gorn also having a bye, certainly opens it up for the second spot and even Isaac Heaney to take a further lead.
Yeah, I think we're going to see as the years go on, but especially in 2024, those, especially in our MVP rookie rankings, what we value as, people who love the game, but a more even performance across the board from all teams. Yes, you do have your star players who stand up in big moments, but we're going to see a lot more contributors, I guess, in, week to week and game to game, matches and stuff like that. So we're, as we'll see, there's quite tight at the top. Yes, there is a little bit of a discrepancy there with buys to come up. As you mentioned, Max Gorn has this week off and Heaney just had the previous weekend off as well. So once obviously round six is completed, we'll see more even playing field and where probably players do land as opposed to, after the buys or the first round of buys.
It is quite a strong midfield pack, and I guess you kind of get that with how much influence midfielders will have across a game. Max Gorn in second, Jeremy Cameron in 10, probably the two allies there. Are there any dark horses you see outside of that top 10 that you think could not only creep in but really contend? I know we're only, less than a quarter of the way through this season, but a pretty strong lead already for Isaac Heaney, and if someone's already 30-plus votes back, it's not exactly easy from here.
No, it's not, but I have really liked this start to the season that St Kilda's captain Jack Steele has put back together. I think he's polled in four out of the five games he's played. Again, not necessarily, dominant like an Isaac Heaney that we've seen, but he does a lot of the grunt work, the hard work that every club needs. And as the captain of the Saints footy club, he's definitely leading the charge in that way to allow maybe the outside players to use their flair and their I'll say pizzazz in terms of getting the ball forward, the Max Kings and the Tim Membrys and even the Jack Higginses. So, Jack Steele said during the week he was happy to play on Tom Green, that real selfless role, and that's something that should be valued probably more. There's kind of intangibles. It's not all about the stat line and how many possessions you get or the goals you kick, but I'm starting to think that, a player like Jack Steele and what he does for his team, both, with and without the ball, is slowly going to start getting more recognised as the year goes on.
Yeah, he's been absolutely fantastic for them. Interesting to see who would, because you always come down to who might steal votes. Ron Marshall's been quite strong, but they've probably just had a couple of other guys who have just stepped up in other games. I think Seb Ross, Brad Hill on the weekend was fantastic. So, I don't think you'll have too many trying to pinch votes when the Saints do win, outside of maybe Marshall and maybe a role player here and there. The Saints aren't probably stacked that well on the top line outside of those two guys. So, for me, last year's winner, Marcus Bontempelli, can't really count him out despite how, with how few wins that they do pick up this year. He's always going to be there or thereabouts among the votes. Nick Dacos was another one who was a really strong contender last year and probably would have won it if it wasn't for that injury. Errol Goulden was another high finisher, but with how well Isaac Heaney's going, plus you add in your Chad Warners, Luke Parker coming back, Callum Mills back at some point, very, very hard to kind of get a real outright lead among the Swans. So, we'll recap a bit more next week after six rounds and then kind of break down a bit more of the numbers to kind of see, you know, who's leading each club and, maybe look at some of the rookies that are polling quite well early into the season and some more data around our MVP votes after every club's played six games. Moving on, though, to some rookies and our rookie rankings. Harley Reid didn't take too long for him to take top spot in our rookie rankings and easily his best game of the season so far and in West Coast colours. Should be getting the Rising Star ranking, Rising Star nomination. I don't see how he possibly couldn't. 27 touches, I think 12 contested, 7 clearances, a nice goal, and plenty of burst and physicality that we've come to see from Reid, I guess, over his draft campaign, and now at senior level just looks so at ease.
Yeah, I mean, there's a reason why he was taking the pick one. I did an interview, I think, post-game. He was saying that he played for his 5 or 6 different teams last year. So you can imagine how what that does to a player not being, I guess, in the know-how of a club's systems and tactics and stuff like that when he's, you know, week in, week out, changing jumpers and changing teammates. So although it only has been, I think, 4 or 5 games, but he seemed to have settled into the AFL life real quickly. He's got a lot of experience around him in terms of Elliot Yeo and Tim Kelly and Liam Duggan down back when he did maybe feature across halfback initially. But through that midfield, you know, with Reid's explosiveness, even Yeo, who had a great game and a great couple of weeks as well, and Tim Kelly still showing some consistent performances throughout the start of the year, it's really quite a nice mix they've got in there. They've got very defensively minded players, but also got the ability to turn defense into offense quite quickly, which we did see Reid do so, you know, across the weekend and even the early parts of this year.
His rise into top spot comes as Colby McKercher really only lasted a few minutes on Sunday due to that rib knock. Subbed out of the game, had 1 touch, 1 clearance. But even if he put in a good enough performance, it was probably going to be pretty hard to halt Reid from going number one. Caleb Windsor holds his spot in third place, still kind of consistent, not, you know, going a level above, but not really having a poor performance by any means across his start. Has the bye this weekend, so certainly could be some pressure from those below for a podium spot. Blake Howes falls out, another one that won't play this week due to the Melbourne's bye. And Seth Campbell's the other one who was in fifth. It's also fallen out, another one that has a bye in round six. So in their place, Sam Closey has played 2 games. I can't remember over the last few editions of our rookie rankings how late into a season a player might have come into our top 5 with such few games. But over 2 matches, averaging 20 goals, 20 goals would be nice. Averaging 20 disposals, 1.5 goals, 4 marks, and a disposal efficiency of about 83%. 1 win, 1 loss. Mostly playing as a halfback wing option, though. Mature age recruit, so for Werribee, from Werribee, probably go around Mitchell Medal winner, looking absolutely at ease in taking that step above. So from the VFL to the AFL, and looks so comfortable. Great ball user, good decision maker. Has been a very big tick for the Suns over their past 2 weeks in what was an impressive outing against GWS, despite the loss, and then a very, very nice win over the Hawks. So interesting to see how they go this weekend and how Sam goes this weekend against Sydney. And then coming back into our rookie rankings top 5, Harvey Thomas from GWS, who, yeah, probably through the draft last year, one of the most versatile players, could play at either end as that, you know, small frame, either dashing halfback or small forward. Started the game forward, kicked a goal, went back a little bit, particularly after, I think, Sam Taylor's injury. Could offer a bit more run as they had to kind of pivot a little. Went forward again and just had a great afternoon in their win over the Saints. So he finds his way back into our top 5.
Yeah, Harvey Thomas is going to be one of those unsung heroes. He just seems to do all the little things right. He's clean below his knees, uses the ball well. You know, I think he's just in the right spot at the right time. Mm-hmm. And as you've alluded to, his versatility to play at both ends of the ground just makes him almost a lock in Adam Kingsley's 22 or 23, especially with how he's performing. So there's definitely no surprise to me and obviously yourself that he's jumped straight back into the top 5 of our rookie rankings.
Yeah, now those rankings will expand to a top six from next week. We'll obviously have a pretty bigger, bit of a bigger pool than what we did with the start of the season. In doing so, we'll expand that to a top six. Every six rounds, we'll add an extra rung in for our rookie rankings. So there's going to be another spot up for grabs on top of what there already is in our rookie rankings, and just a couple of probably names who get honourable mentions for this week and potentially could be in the mix in 7 days' time. Will Graham, fantastically at 13 or 14 tackles in his second game for the Suns. Hugo Garcia, only pretty had one quarter, but had a huge impact in getting the Saints back into the game with his pressure, tackling, and just efforts around the contest. And then Mykelti Lefau, fantastic story, obviously, at Richmond to get an SSP spot and, kick 3 goals against West Coast. It wasn't the afternoon the Tigers were after. But, he was one of the best performers for our rookies in round 5, and there were certainly a few more. I think Riley Sanders was probably going to be knocking on the door of a top 5 spot before only seeing about half a game. So full performance from him this weekend could get him that 6th spot. But, there's a little bit to plenty of names, I should say, pushing for one of our spots in our rookie rankings. And to cap off the show, Phoenix, while he's on here, his favourite segment, mailbag. We've got one take this week from Van Johnson 14. Says Nate Caddy will be the best player from the 23 draft. Thoughts?
I mean, it's hard to go past Harley Reid, and we haven't seen Nate Caddy at the level yet, but he's got so much star factor and star power in his game. You can chuck him through the midfield. He's obviously playing as up forward in the VFL. Just needs to kind of get his body right. And I'd like to see what Essendon do with him over the next few years. I think he stands at around 190, so he can play a bit of a bullocking tall, maybe even a bit taller than that. So it'd be interesting to see if they really commit to him being maybe a third tall, or if they start to prep him for more midfield minutes and really be that kind of a complex player where he can play in both positions and be really aggressive going from the midfield up forward. We've seen Dustin Martin do it, Christian Petrarca do it, Bontempelli at times has done it. Again, not necessarily the same type of player, but I think he has the potential to do something like that. And that's why, I do think he may not necessarily be the best out of the crop of 2023 draftees, but definitely going to be up there and contending for hopefully the next 10, 15 years for the Bombers.
Yeah, as far as key position talent, certainly could be the number one. It's looked okay in the VFL. Probably would have had a debut by now if it wasn't for A, preseason setbacks, and B, the resurgence of Harrison Jones as that kind of third tall forward to kind of complement Kyle Langford and Peter Wright. Yeah, hard to go past Reid. I was a pretty big Riley Sanders fan throughout last year. And Dan Curtin, the one that we haven't seen at senior level yet, I think he's the one that you certainly can't rule out. Look, we're 5 games in for some of these kids, and like Nate and Dan Curtin yet to play a game. But Harley Reid's still your number one. But I certainly like the call that Nate might be up there by the end of the career, but that's 15 to 20 years away. So we'll come back to this tape then. But until then, that'll wrap us up for another week on Zero Hanger TV. Thanks again, Aiden.
Thank you very much, Mitch.
Obviously, if you can catch all our content on zerohanger.com or all our videos on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook, and of course on YouTube.